Thank you.
Okay, I do have a little bit something to mention. Our secretary, Adriana Gomez, is going to leave us and going to grad school. We would like to do, we would like to have a letter of recommendation or of appreciation with the KPFK letterhead for her, so that she can then take that and use it as a record if there are no objections.
All right.
Okay, none seen, that will be done. Now on to the, this is a continued meeting from our last meeting. We are on item two, committee report. The Finance Committee has 5 minutes. If you look at the agenda, there are a few actions also. We do those. The a few actions were Ali Lexus, Margaret Prescott, Dan Goodman, and that was it. And Richard was late. He said he'd come late. I know that Ali Lexus is teaching a class. Ms. Prescott is on the East Coast. Her mother's 90th birthday.
Yeah.
So if there are no objections, there is no objection. Let's take a hand vote on this motion of these three people. All in favor of excuse absence?
You got it? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And that was here. 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 in favor. All those opposed? 1 opposed. Abstention? 1, 2.
Now on to the committee report.
All the members of the agenda require two-thirds because it's a continuation of the previous agenda.
Ms. Pope said that it's in there.
The mission of the general manager is in there.
She said the mission of the general manager is in there.
Okay.
Right.
Right.
It says it.
Yes, here.
Check.
Okay, so thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yes, right now we're coming past the minute.
Yeah, we're coming. We're on the vote.
Oh,
we're on the exactly what you want? A copy of it?
Oh, I have it, but I have an amendment.
Oh, to the June 7th. An amendment to the June 7th.
Yeah. Number 3, personnel committee support. Second motion, manager of the personnel committee roster, the following individuals are listed on the roster. This includes Donna Warren. I'm not sure why Donna informed me earlier that she's not interested in the personnel committee. So whatever reason that there.
I wasn't aware that I was
looking for
personnel.
You're a on the June 7th notice, was that Turner's motion or the Finance Committee's motion? Whereas human resource programmers not being organized or unionized in the grievance and all that. Remember the motion to say we want that payment, you know, for the child care and all that?
Oh, the very wrong one?
Yeah. Is that from the Finance Committee?
Oh, that was
the Okay, so listed as Finance Committee currently.
That should be
so if we could strike that, and then I would move with that.
Mm-hmm.
Still have corrections in there?
Yes.
June 7th, or more point. My name is Hitch out the middle
of that wasn't an accident.
For the record, I get sick of saying it. My name is copyrighted. I don't usually but print it without the copyright symbol, but fair use is fair use, I suppose.
I remember the copyright
symbol.
That's compromised. If there's no more
intellectual property.
So we take the one about finance.
Commerce without permission and without license.
Are there any other amendments?
I suggest
none. Seeing none. All in favor of approving the minutes as amended? Can you show hands?
No.
All in favor of approving the minutes for both sections?
No.
Oh, for the
June 7th. Yeah, June 7th.
June 7th, as amended. Show hands.
Raise them up. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. In favor, all those opposed? Abstained? 1, 2, 3. 3 abstentions.
Okay, moving on to the first. June 1st. Plan.
Welcome.
My first, second. Ms. Luck.
The motion to poll the members for the inspection session is not one. And Sarah, just confirm that you checked it on the audio.
Thank you. Any more? Give you a moment to look at
Yes, I have the original.
Well, we don't get to it, but that's where things totally go. If there are any objections, that's where we'll put it, because we can't put it in place else. No objections, same thing. That's what we'll have.
I have an objection.
Yes?
But this body feels that the budget discussion should occur at certain 4 p.m., which is very soon, then I suggest that all the committee reports be placed after the budget discussion on the agenda.
I would agree. Second, turn. As an executive, any discussion? So we're going all those in favor of the amendment to put the
committee report.
Does anybody want to volunteer?
Is there any volunteers? Ms. Eric?
I'd like to nominate Sean. If you want to do Sean?
Yeah, I'll do it. Thank you very much. So we got that done. That job on my definition of hell.
Okay, yeah.
No, thank you. I know. I just
don't want to go to hell before.
Okay, so we have a member. Mr. Donald Block. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Bob.
Because in the Bible, there's a provision there.
very qualified as an board. There can only be one ballot for an amendment, first of all, on the period. So what I'm going to do to the Madison board, the 30-day payout period, to permit other amendments to be presented to go on the ballot with that bylaw amendment. Also, there are issues of logistics. To approve a bylaw amendment, there's only been one necessity in the area. It's a very significant, logistical enterprise that we have. We have cars running on all five stations for 60 days. Some may feel, you know, it burdens the air down somewhat to have all this governance notice. So it's really also very efficient to have any bylaw amendment that needs pending go on. So we only go through this process once we have a board president, we have to get the five LPs to go to the big calendar month, so it all has time. And I really kind of know Randy for taking the initiative to pull this amendment together and try to So the governor's committee recommendation is that the grace period be extended until November. But the important thing in our motion is that there be a meeting of the bylaw working group to discuss the possible bylaw amendment. So I would suggest this motion get approved by the governing committee. Move to recommend that the KPSA bylaw working group convene for open discussion of possible bylaw amendments and that our team be delegated to delay the introduction of any bylaw amendment until the November meeting, which gives the community an opportunity to introduce other amendments. Approved by unanimous consent. I must add that there's something that's leading in my report. In the written version of the report, I state that if one bylaw amendment is processed and initiated, that no other amendment could be presented within a 12-month period. The fact, thank you, Yosh pointed out to me that actually another amendment can be proposed with a two-thirds vote of the National Board. One caveat is it's a very long process. And also, sometimes the typical courts have a tendency to bifurcate and split down the middle of very silly things. And two-thirds may look easy on paper, but in reality, it becomes quite a burden. So I really think that it's some sort of very serious
one. Absolutely. Okay. I hope you don't have that. Are you done? I think the vote, I've been out of discussion on this.
Yeah.
I'm going to argue for and ask Josh why I'm so critical. I'm concerned that it would take a lot of time and energy to get to two-thirds. This would give us an opportunity to finally start discussing some of the really critical bylaws that issues and listening to some of the bylaws discussion group. So my question is why, what the problem is about waiting for 3 months? What impact would it have on the motion that you were forward and you thought was to wait 3 months?
Thank you. Can I ask in respect to time, if we can take two pros and two cons and then vote on them, that would be great. That is one pro.
Correct.
Yes, because that's
the
point of information, but it is a pro.
Point of information also. Objection? Yes. November meeting, you mean November PMD meeting?
Yes,
November
PMD meeting would
have occurred. Can you put in PMD? It wasn't
clear.
November PMD meeting, that's what it means.
Thank you. Okay,
I will say that there is supposed to be a bylaws working group
my knowledge, that bylaw working group has never met. It's not met prior to my proposing those bylaw amendments. Well, I propose them probably 2 months or more ago, and they were passed about a month or so ago. No meetings have ever taken place, and for you or Jack or anyone else to say, well, let's you know, give us some time. Well, you've already had, you know, from January 1st until August, and that's one more time. That's all.
Okay, I know, Mr. Brett.
I'd like to respond and say that there are 3 applicants in the working group, and that response from one person. So that did not happen. Now, the question is, could it be convened at this juncture? I think it could be if two conditions occur. One is that there is a lot of public call for things with that working group, and the issues are clearly defined. I think the fact that I have no notes about the people who signed up for that working group and we had no specific bylaws to deal with it, what's the problem with getting together?
Thank you. Okay. So we have discussion and vote on this?
Yeah.
Okay, the motion has been read, as I can understand it. All those in favor of the motion being passed, please give it. Would you do a roll call vote? Roll call vote, please.
Ray Yang.
Abstain.
Ray Madison. Pass. John
Margenis. Pass.
Chris Cummins?
Yes.
Mike Dillon?
Yes.
Adrian Ware?
Yes.
Sharon Bluff?
Yes.
Lee Johnson?
I'll pass this one.
Tracy Morgan?
Okay.
John Casey O'Brien?
Yes.
Sean Thompson?
Abstain.
Jesse Walker?
Yes.
Henry? Abstain.
Stephanie
Lincoln?
Donna
Warren? Keela? Keela.
Steve
Wonderland? Abstain.
Abstain. I'll vote yes on this just because it's kind of a contentious issue about our work. I don't mean to slow you down at all.
You got to do that.
When you said in January, I was just felt like it was
like a pound and a half, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
you know, half.
Go ahead. What's the item?
It's 7 names, no names, and 9 abstentions.
It's 77.
Well, what about the passes?
They're most of the
passes.
They're all passes.
Okay.
Most of the passes. Okay. Is that it? Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay. Next one, we're going to move on to item 3. Unfinished business, election of members of the Ethics Committee. I want to stretch a little bit to be able to be
warm for that. 20
minutes it is.
Yeah.
And please come to effect. I'm going to take a look at
the table and allow for the Shaki Gilbride, Chair of the Election of DVD.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
We're not here to debate the rest of the members.
I'm sorry?
Motion to table.
A motion to table item 3 again?
Second.
Oh, absolutely.
That's the argument. 4 meetings in a row now.
Well,
motion to table.
Second.
Let's take a vote. All those in favor of postponing this item, table this item until after the motion to amend. All those in favor of that?
No, we should be debating this.
No, sorry.
Not today.
Show of hands to postpone it.
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight in favor. All those against.
All those against tabling it.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 6 against. Abstention. 1 abstention made.
Wait, he might have had that one. He didn't count Chris.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you didn't
count Chris.
No, but Chris was
voting for him. Okay, we'll raise your hand more time. You're against. Take
your hand
alive. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Against, Brett.
7 against. And then 1 that session.
Right.
So what is it?
You can bring
8, 7, 1. Okay.
What is the table?
I'm sorry.
Yes.
Point of information.
information.
Yeah.
Are you saying that some, I don't have the word there, the ethics committee resolution has something specifically
for
specifically
that's
in the wording of that.
That's in the wording of that.
No, no, no. Yes, absolutely wrong, Jack. Erroneous, I'm sorry.
Why don't we have the wording on it?
No, it means, you know, first of all, that the secondary temporary city of Williamsburg.
Hold up, just because they're blind, you don't have the floor. Board, because they're blind, you don't have the floor. Where's the motion? Can we have the motion?
We have a copy of it.
You have a copy of it, anybody? Are you clear on that? We're about that already. Are you looking it up now, Mr. Dick?
Yeah, but I'm not.
Do you have it?
No, I just want to speak in the debate.
I'm sorry?
Yeah,
Jason. He wants to speak in the debate.
What?
We have a bet. We're going to bet. While we're doing that, let's come in the debate. Who's going to bet?
First, I have a second of right on
the line. Mr. O'Brien?
This motion.
I'm sorry. Mr. Johnson, and thank you.
I got the motion.
Okay. Just a moment. Mr. O'Brien, can I hold up 1 second?
Go ahead.
Would you please read the motion?
Motion of May 7th, the Standing Ethics Committee of 5 people, including the chair and one member of the KDFA LSP, be created by an FTC vote of the entire LSP with 400 members, meet rapidly to investigate and or make adjudications regarding sensitive disciplinary and or ethics situations. The body of 5 shall have the power to impose discipline on a temporary basis until the next LSP meeting. At the next meeting of the LSP, this committee's adjudication can be upheld or overturned by the entire LSP. This standing committee shall ensure that the person or persons charged with misconduct will be given a full opportunity to present defense for themselves and the due process will be observed. The ethics committee may temporarily impose aggressive discipline, including but not limited to warning, reprimand, censure, barring from LSP meetings or LSP committee meetings. Borrowing from LSP meetings.
You don't have to yell, Jack. You don't have to yell.
Borrowing from the station and station functions with the concurrence of the general manager. This body will need to respond to any serious complaint made about an LSP member or any other ethics situation personally regarding the station.
Thank you so much. Now, are you saying that this is illegal?
It's illegal and there are conflicts with bylaws.
Where? Show me where it is.
The bylaws have specific.
You know what? There's a lot of talk about what the bylaws are. If someone brings up an issue like this, I'm from Missouri. Show me.
I recommend that Terry
Goodman
be called
on,
too.
The section from the bylaws.
What is it?
Article 4, Delegates, Section 9, Removal of Delegates.
I'm sorry, what is it again?
Article 4, Section 9, Removal of Delegates. I don't think it's mine, but
article
in the chair.
It's a bylaw.
Bylaws supersede our parliamentary authority. They supersede any rule passed by this body. Any policy that we pass has to be in conformity with bylaws, or else the next statute is illegal. Doesn't mean it is illegal.
It's not a misdemeanor. Just
an
infraction.
Okay,
I would like to hear it.
Removal of delegate. Any delegate shall be removed from the position of delegate and cease to be a delegate upon the occurrence of any of the following: A. Death delegate steps of resignation. B. Upon the appearance of a disqualifying act, e.g., the appointment to an elected office. C. Failure of the delegate to attend three consecutive local station board meetings, which happens with the methods used by a majority vote of the LSP members present at the meeting requested. D. Upon fair and reasonable determination by a vote of all the directors of the foundation or a two-thirds vote of all the delegates of the same organization as a delegate in question, at a meeting on said issue, after a review of that, in its sole discretion, this delegate and this is the conduct that is ever the best interest of the combination of the organization. Or he is on the Liberty Bowl of the last member associated with the radio station, who originally elected the delegate voted by this ballot in the election to remove that ballot, provided that the form of the sale by this ballot, etc.
No, that's enough. But it seems to me that already B and D seem to apply.
Where's the delegate? It requires a two-thirds of all delegates for 30 days to remove a delegate. Barring a delegate with LSD meaning, suspension and the moral equivalent of removal to remove the delegate's photograph. Therefore, any
time
you have a suspension, any voluntary suspension should require a two-thirds vote of all delegates of 30 days.
The first thing is, there is something that's seemingly contradictory in this, that this motion. Point is, this ethics committee is not a forum simply to deal with the behavior of LSD members. We really need some sort of emergency body that can make decisions about members of the public who may threaten another person with physical violence, who may be disrupted at meetings. There are all kinds of things that may be necessary, which is the reason that the third paragraph is here. Now, the first paragraph, the study of the House of Powers imposed this one on September 8th until the next LSD meeting. That's all. This is in no way suspending any member. It says right here that discipline is only very temporary until the next LSD meeting. So, in no way is any member denied their voting rights or anything of that nature. The LSD has to be able to make its meetings, committee meetings, and other meetings safe for the public. I thought that you shared your responsibility.
Thank you. Can we, Mr. O'Brien, now I'll try to hold them off.
No, that's all right. I want to associate myself with the remarks of Ms. Aaron, and I just want you to say, nobody is being suspended. The LSB is the only one that can suspend anybody in compliance with the bylaws. Because we have a committee that takes care of disciplinary problems for us without tying up the whole board is a good thing. And they can't, their decision is not final until they bring it before the whole LSB. To me, this is common sense, and it doesn't tie the board up for months, which has been the case.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Well, I'm sorry.
You might just think.
I don't know, and I would ask Terry to say that this is a different kind of breach, but in dealing with the issue of not having enough non-LSD members on many committees, I looked up our committee formation. Our standing committees are not elected. People volunteer, and they are open to non-LSD members as well. So this is actually in violation of
point of information. This deals with the LSB members all the time.
I'm sorry. Please.
So this is in violation of policy.
It's in violation of policy because there are no listed on it.
And committees are, people join committees voluntarily. They are not elected.
I'm sorry?
Members of the LSB and of the public join committees voluntarily. Committees that can be comprised of up to 50% non-LSD members. The chair has to be an LSD member. This is the end
of the
decision. It was from January 2007. And I don't know, Terry and I didn't discuss this point, but it is in violation of previous policy. So I believe this whole thing is not legal. It's not consistent with our policy.
With our bylaws?
With KPSK policy passed by the LSB.
The bylaws.
Point of business.
Well, the bylaws are passed policy which we've established for forming
a steering committee.
I'm sorry, Karen, would you like to clarify for this?
I'd like to simplify.
Please.
Yeah, the motion for the ethics committee was based upon the Robert Rules of Order description of disciplinary committee.
And there's that need. However, in the rules, disciplinary committees have the delegated authority to investigate, report, and recommend, not to impose discipline. On page 44 of the rules, it says the committee has no power to punish its members for disorder or other improper conduct related to its proceedings, but to report the facts to the assembly. On page 517, it says the committee as a whole, meaning the whole PMB, or the whole LSC, has no power to impose disciplinary measures on its members, but can only report the facts to the assembly. I believe that the power to discipline members is not a power that can be delegated, right? And that Mr. Van Aken is correct that there is a continuing breach because the motion adopted does delegate authority to not be delegated.
Point of order. Yes, I believe that can be resolved by the chair ruling that portion of the motion out of order. And so now we have to go through the roll and tumble. No, but the chair can rule that that is the prior to the motion that's framed without the order.
Right. Thank you, David.
Is there a
violation?
Okay, so a question.
So I just want to say, we're trying to pinpoint something and we're doing it comfortably. I now want to make the motion properly, which is the motion to postpone the last two, to consider a motion to amend. We'll fix this motion, they should express what we as the majority want properly and everything.
Yes.
So I checked our actual motion to postpone the last two, the majority. I have satisfaction to do this, all things we are going to do, things that we have to do.
But I'll be changing the agenda and we'll take a 2/3.
Yeah, but I looked at it in the simple form of the
part of the
majority.
I'm sorry,
I agree with your point, but I looked at Robert because in the simple form, unless you're making a special rule of order, it requires a simple majority.
In a simple form?
In a simple, you can, for the first step, you can make a special rule of order, which is something you can adjust.
We have a stack here, and can you make a motion to do what?
That's right, correct.
And a score of
am being somewhat swayed by your argument. And I think Mr. Abelson has a point. So your suggestion is to postpone this. And so that's when we make an amendment.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter if you didn't vote to amend it. You could just rule that the portion of the motion without
Just rule that.
Then if you the bottom want to get the vote to motion, you can do that. And it would take 5 minutes to vote another down in the meeting.
Okay, so I'll take your point, and you've asked to table this until after the meeting. We want to strike that offending language that you could just talk
about. Who's striking it? The chair has authority to strike the portion of the resolution which your council has filed. We just rule it out or even if we pass it, we say, I'm sorry, and it's about to my attention,
so that's the chair.
I'm really not stricken from the resolution.
I would like to rule that out on the board so that it would be in keeping with our policy. Now, the power that we will be given to the committee is a temporary power until the following, until the very next LSC meeting. And that meeting, that person will be at that meeting.
That's right.
At that time, the board will decide whether to sustain it or whether to...
Well, that's fine, but that's not what the motion says.
What's the motion say?
Then in any time, you can look at the motion, read what it says, and agree with that for the team.
And we just like the assembly language. Jack, are you happy?
Alright, well, we're just going to move on to a temporary basis while we decide what we need to do. How's that?
Think that's fun?
Okay, Mr. Chair, what are we doing? Do we have time for what we're doing?
I would like to extend time. Okay, so we have a time frame. We're going to have to put this on hold until after the meeting.
Let's just move this question and vote on
So we go over the budget and then we come back. Cool. All right, Mr. Reese, are you handling this?
Yeah, you know what? We need to talk to this way if you want to see the stuff on the wall. I have to set up the
way. Does everyone have a copy of it anymore?
Yeah.
Does anyone have a copy of it?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah.
be in the view of the time, if you don't mind. If you let me do a roll, I'll send it. You ever think of one?
Yeah.
I don't think all members are back here.
Well, thank you for the warm welcome over the last few weeks. My report is fairly brief. Included in there, controversial or not, is some programming highlights of the program director. And a lot of it is going to be a little redundant because we all have been in the loop. I've been asked to, through various emails and phone calls, to explain the process of whether it's accurate or not, to accomplish staff reduction. Really, we're talking about layoff, which is elimination of positions as opposed to specific people. I think that that can confuse a little bit, and I can talk more about the difference. But I've been speaking with HR Dominga up in National, and also Nicole, and our own business manager, and at times with various members of this LSB to get recommendations and opinions. We have identified several positions which I'm still contemplating. I haven't made any final decisions, but we have proposed several positions that should be eliminated. And again, this is due to the fact that we're trying to balance our budget for FY09 and keep the lights on schedule. The criteria, straightforward. Again, we're looking at positions as opposed to people. We're talking about positions that are redundant, positions that are necessary or not, and then the relationship of those positions to the effectiveness and performance of patient care. Very general, hard to be specific about. There are certain positions at KKK that were supposed to be eliminated and then never worked. And so we're looking at those first. And then from there, this is pretty easy to work through. From there, we're looking at positions that we can, in layman's terms, operate without at least some help from. I would rather not eliminate any of these positions, but I know it's necessary, and I know that with good planning, we can eliminate several positions and not put the station in a position where it can no longer operate effectively and improve. If you have any questions about that, I'll come back to it. Additionally, I'm analyzing all of the key areas of the station over the last month. I've been meeting every single day, all day. So much so that it's gotten me bogged down at times, and just recently my schedule has finally opened up where I don't have 3 or 4 or 5 one-hour meetings per day. They were necessary, but the sheer number of meetings has put me in a position where I'm not exactly ready to make any recommendations to the board on some of the necessary changes outside of simply identifying positions that we can go about. But I have been meeting with P&B members, LSP members, the advisory board members, national office listeners, of course all the paid and unpaid staff, and many of them possibly fit in that schedule. Can't actually identify any state staff at this point that I haven't met with for at least a good hour to get their side of what's going on in their area. So over the next several days, again, my schedule has just opened up. I plan on doing some real analysis with the information that I've gathered.
I really do actually encourage you to contact me directly for everybody on the board. If you haven't already, then you'd like to follow up again. If you'd like to present any recommendations on changes, we do need some guidance. There's a lot of conflicting information. And being on the board for 1 month puts me at a disadvantage to make changes, especially reductions in staff or elimination positions so quickly. I know it's necessary, and we will be able to make changes, but those changes will be much more effective if I do get a little more guidance from this body. On a positive note, at least for most folks, the 50th anniversary kickoff, the Clash of the Pro Shows was, I think, a really successful event. Sue Welsh, who has volunteered to be laid off, actually I asked her not to, at least for now, but she decided she wanted to move on. It was basically over here. So she has left the station. She was instrumental in making this a success, the event, along with several other people, all the guys over at the Cultural Power. There were many other staff members who were involved to make it possible, but Sue really was the driving force to success. Cultural Power, I think you're all familiar with, prior to the war. I think they did a really good job with entertaining the crowd for comedy and things like that. That's still a really good LA-based Chicano Latino world music rock band. We really entertaining, of course, it was the Culture Clash. We brought their well-known world-class talent, and all of that was donated to us. From everything I could tell, from all the numbers I was given, we just about netted $30,000 from the event, which is a huge improvement from the projections that I was given when I first walked in the door, which was amazing to break even. And then it became amazing to make 7,000. And then towards the right at the eve of the event, I was told it was going to be a success. And LA Times, LA Weekly, Poster Out Power, Culture Clash, and Nestle all doing fine promotions. Malibu, I know some people have been very interested in the progress of our signal there. Malibu is not the only area that's being affected. The culprit behind the problem is, as you all know, I'm sure, Classical Station of San Diego, which is, has a transmitter on the south side of the border. Therefore, under the governance of the Mexican government, it makes it difficult for us to ask them to do what they promised to do, which is remove the power on 90.7. Matter of fact, they agreed to move off 90.7, and that hasn't happened yet, and I've spoken to the chief over here, Bob, and he's asked that we take a hard look at a couple of new tactics, including some sort of a push in the San Diego market to get listeners to pressure the FCC to continue working with the Mexican government, as well as myself and the other members of this body would like to join me in actually meeting again with to do a little more outreach to those folks and see if we can convince them to move a little more quickly or at the very least reduce power. That 10,000 watts for 90.7, they should be at a maximum of 1,000. So that in itself would would help out tremendously. But how that relates to now the raw data interference that's taken all over the place. So now we have a specific area, Lila Garrett, that with Bob and I in touch with some private landowners on a ridge over Malibu, who all agreed that they would allow us to put the antenna on their site. The street of the site, all of them have expressed interest in seeing there, which would alleviate our dilemma with Verizon because there's no power source for Verizon. And then it also opens up some permit issues, which seems to have created so much red tape that we're sort of stuck in one place. So if we can go ahead and put our antenna up there on one of the private properties, then we should alleviate the problem. There are other concerns with doing so. If someone was to sell their private property, what would happen to the antenna? There is, again, the power issue. I don't know, at least one of the residents has said that they're okay with us using their power and working out a situation where we would pay for the increase in power due to us being up there. And Bob is very excited to tell Jonathan might be able to learn some more. He's been very optimistic about at least one of those positions as to overall coverage of the year.
This is Jonathan.
I noticed they haven't switched signals yet. They think it's just like making press releases saying they were going to do so and have to notice that they were driving up the coast. We are still completely shut out in all of Malibu. We used to have a San Diego listenership in North County. I would suggest that we contact, you know, whatever peace groups and veteran groups and, you know, whatever organizations in North County that have a progressive stand where you're going to find people who used to listen to us and can't get us anymore, or can't get us with their back up to a wall and the mountains, canyons, and all that. So that's one thing we can do. I noticed that you say here on July 11th here in the program part, the highlight, that Counterspin and Deadline LA are now at 3 o'clock. I'm wondering what's now at Saturday at 12 when they used to be. And I guess we also
Saturday at 12, I think it's here is
Soundwave.
I was just listening to the first time today. And it's a 2 hour.
Yeah, that particular program is devoted to music and its relationship to the internet. And then how artists, independent artists can further their career by using online services to promote and distribute their music. And the gentleman has several segments show where he has yet to speak about their successes of promoting and distributing music online and play some of the
music. Yeah, I'm trying to figure out what that was. Who's
the host?
What's that? Who's the host?
Good question. Right here.
I don't know. Not Sam Brown, is it?
No.
As far as the programming as it goes now, I can address that. I understand, I've received lots of information about our current program director. And the reason we have program directors is in progressive programming. I, at this point, have not really fully solidified my opinion of all of our programming. Still trying to make heads and tails of most of it. And the highlights that he is presenting are from him and not from me. I have incorporated in my report.
Ms. Reed, and then Ms. Luff.
And they want to do something long-term with us, and they want to arrange to have an easement, which would become a permanent cost of that property, that if they did ever sell it, it's like having a utility line on the property. You can't ever take that line off, even if you sell the house at the time. So if they truly like want to support us, we can create an easement situation with them that would be contractually binding for all future generations on anyone who's ever bought that property. So if we have a permanent situation, but one is attainable, I mean, that's
legally, it's a completely doable situation. Redundancy and necessity are obviously combined within that layout position. But effectiveness and performance, doesn't this kind of contradict the seniority portion of that layout position? And you have to answer right now, but I just want to, as an old union hand, I just want to raise that. And then my other question is about this new program, which I haven't yet listed here, My concern is, was there a call for proposals for that? Because the problem, consistent problem that we have with programs is things are willy-nilly brought in when there's been no call for proposals, and we don't know who might have the best proposal for the concept. So that, once there's a concept, then, who's out there who might do a good job, and then if there is a call, how are those proposals adapted? So that's my concern about, or my question, and a concern
about it.
I just wanted to respond to what Sharon was saying. The whole question of call for proposals goes to the question of, are we going to be forever dependent on outside programmers coming in with program ideas, or are we at a station going to be able to generate programs ourselves, which in which there is no call for proposals at all? It's just that we decide this is what we want to do, we create it in-house, and then do it. Now, at the present, I would say that this station does not have the ability to do that, but it should. And that's one of the things that we should focus on. And that, of course, means not cutting programmers. I know we have two senior programmers. That's not redundancy, in my opinion. That's just two people with the same title. We need four. And we don't want to take those two people and cut them down to one. We need to take those people and expand them so that we have more capabilities in that area. It doesn't matter what it's called. But I think that the whole question of redundancy should not necessarily be applied to people with, just because there are two people who are faculty in the program. And because what we're saying, we need more productive capability in that.
Chris, you need producers, don't you?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sorry.
I forgot to mention, also it says here on July 15th, special coverage from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. or 6 a.m. to 11 a.m. And I was listening, I think that morning, that was the House on Presidential Uses and Executive Power, and I got to say, a little disappointed because it was cut off at 10 a.m. on our station, and it was like all of a sudden in mid-session, we got, hi, I'm C.C. Smith, and this is the Global Village, so it was awkward, I thought. And I just wanted to respond to what Chris was saying. One way we can do things is have senior producers who help people who don't know how to make radio, which kind of is what happened at one point. And we started doing that, so bringing in some fantastic organizers in the community and putting a senior producer with them and making them build the show, and eventually, hopefully, they get to the point where they don't need to hold their hand the whole time. Another thing you can do was going on prior to that, was we would have a call for volunteers, and we would train people how to produce radio. And then we would say, hey, we've got a show here, you're going to produce with Sam Brown in 3 months. And you're going to go over here and produce with Sean and, the Actors Unlimited crew or whatever. And we would move producers and teach them how to make radio so that we don't need to have paid senior producers. So those are the positions that came about. I think technically speaking, even though we had a senior producer position, two of them, we had a senior producer who's been there for 30 years.
Thank you. We're going to have one last
point of privilege. I must say that after doing this for 7 years, Access Unlimited should be teaching people how to produce programs that really doesn't need other producers to help them, we should produce.
Thanks. I'm sorry for meaning your show. I just meant it as an example.
Okay. We're going to have one more comment, and then we are cut out for I'm Mr. Hennig, just for the lab work.
Sean Hartley, I think I'm asking for level, we often come to the situation where there's been developed a national program that might be covered in a hearing, or it might be something that's very conducive and a lot of effort going into something like KDFA's winter solstice hearing, the recent green card coverage that the car fires to us is very well done. And then we get sort of a survey, a hot survey, where one station decided not to carry it, another station decided, rebroadcast it, they cut it off and leave it dead for an hour or something. And I'm just wondering, let me just give you, my perception of what happened is that this desire to have national branding for Pacifica, in order to further the foundation's growth potential, it comes into conflict with Pacifica cultural economy and grassroots origination of policy, and there's also the issue of preemption causing an uproar and then the program of lobbying causing campaigns. But anyway, so I'm just interested in what's your take on when the national office indicates that they might have a month carry. How do you feel about it?
I actually very warm to that idea. I think so far I don't see any indication that I would find too many occasions where I would oppose carrying the national program. We're having some issues with our own program in terms of whether it's compelling and what our listenership is right now. I think it can only help bridge some of these well-produced shows and special programs from a pool of the network staff.
Thanks.
And we've added some of our folks to those programs. And I think that the collective between the five stations, we have an opportunity to create some programs that work out.
Thank you so much, Dr. for coming in and giving what that issue. And I also would like to say that your willingness to work with us and to help us, aid us in helping you get through this thing is greatly appreciated on the board. I'm hoping that you would establish such a relationship that seems to be developing as such. How will we operate for 2 months on this item? And that's what we'll do. Thank you.
Okay, Sean, did you want to give us an overview? I mean, anytime you can tell me what the most interesting is. Okay, I guess, as chair of the finance committee, I'd like to say first is everyone has had an opportunity to review the budget, and I hope that most people have availed themselves of that opportunity. Many of the people here today were at the meeting on the 22nd, and got a copy of the budget, and it hasn't changed significantly since that point. So, can you tell us what the changes are? I'm going to let Sean do that if there are any changes to the at our meeting on the 22nd, but the only thing of regard to that is we're working on further reductions. So, but I didn't see any significant changes from our meeting on the 22nd. So, so that having been said, I hope that everyone has actually availed themselves of the opportunity to look at the budget so that if you have questions, you can kind of get through them expeditiously. And then I think we'll just go through the budget, let Sean tell us about certain changes, because that's what most people are concerned with, and then we'll take it back and take any questions, and then hopefully we can get to a vote and do this in kind of an efficient manner.
May I also add in that there was a motion to have a meeting on the budget, and we have had that meeting, and also we're incorporating that same meeting here, so I would like to rescind that, if there's no objection, that special meeting for the budget, because this is pretty much it.
There was confusion over how I noticed that meeting, as we all know, so if we could rescind the previous motion that we were having an additional special meeting, because we did in fact have a meeting with the budget, which should have been we are now meeting here to vote on that.
My understanding is we'll be back to that very separately. Yeah. Basically, our prior meeting was that the chair would notice the meeting after we received the budget. The motion was that the chair would notice the meeting at which we would discuss the budget after we received a copy of it. And my understanding is he took the opportunity to make this meeting that
Well, there was a motion in the governance committee that this was given an opportunity, and that neither would spend the time, as I don't think it was the last 7 o'clock, or call a special meeting so you can complete the process.
No, this is an hour. this will be that. We're going to deal with it now.
So we're going to be here until we approve.
I would also like to say that we have a committee that is very functional, the science committee, and they've done a lot of work on it. We also have a GM that has worked on this as well. And I've also asked the chair of the finance committee to make sure everybody got a copy of it via email so they can look at it before getting here. And hopefully we can go through it and if there's anything that's glaringly wrong or questionable, of course we want to address that. If there's not, hopefully we can pass this thing expediently.
Any objections to that?
Any objections? None? Anything?
I have a question about, I noticed that there are names mentioned, and there's child care and names.
PayPal as well, using online as much as possible, moving people to online to stay in the trees, but also to accrue information like email addresses so we can go back to people, not only to ask for funds, but also to link people up with enhanced information and to communicate with them as supporters and members, because they can vote on the government. So I think it's important that we do that, and we are way behind the curve, extremely, like shocking behind the curve, on the email, acquiring emails, and moving people over to online for all sorts of services, not just the fundraising. So 85% fulfillment rate is our goal. I feel very confident that we'll be able to do that. Mm-hmm. Direct mail income, I think it's a pretty modest goal. I haven't really thinking with that too much because I haven't had a chance to really figure out what's going on with that.
Quick question.
Yes.
Is this direct mail that we do exclusively or in collaboration with the National Office, and if you talk to the National Office, you share that their mailbox and our mailbox?
Yes. Correct. I have spoken to them about the area subject. This is our mailbox exclusively. And it is concerning that the National Office has been sending out mail, direct mail without our knowledge. I think that will stop. And I encourage them to work with us so that we can make sure that the benefits as opposed to just the National Office.
There's no point in the figure that people give, they think they're becoming a member,
yeah.
They don't pay.
Right.
And any national mail, we should have a checkoff of which organizations they're looking to, so they know, and we know, how much money they're getting from our government.
Absolutely.
And that doesn't, when you give a certificate,
national you don't become a member.
That may be something you should be able to do.
Right.
If you live in Ohio, you can decide to be a PSW member.
Okay, I'll take a stab at questions after we get them, but we can try to say what your questions are in 6 months, but I just want to ask them. I would like to try and get them through on schedule, but you're not.
Okay. We can move through mail renewals. Basically, that allows us to go in there and start to change it, and start to change the TV media thing. No salary increases, I think 51 on number 7 there, minus 73. No, in other words, minus 79. So we decided not to do any increases this year. Health benefits, I don't know if this actually demonstrates this properly, we will check the at least on my document, I don't know what I'm correct. We have moved all staff, all management, all state staff to private HMO, which saved the station about $51,000 a year.
It may cost you something. Kaiser hospitals are completely contaminated with penicillin resistant bacteria.
Oh, God. Okay,
We're staying with association and periodicals and membership for now because I believe that we need to do so in order to be relevant.
Excuse me, Sean, could you go through and could you skip the line so we can quickly
yes, find out? That one was on line 106.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Did you let him put up on Arbitron?
Arbitron, we will maintain. Yeah.
Is that in that category?
No, the double check. Mm-hmm.
Still be able to know.
It is an online. It's under, it's on page, that's on page 4 of 8 lines.
But
what's
the $10,000 meeting expense?
Good.
That
one was
I'll put you on the staff.
That one was so that we could possibly attend various meetings. The staff could be sent to various meetings throughout the country, but I sent that to the national office. I sent to WDAI or sent to PRDM, Radio Development Membership Conference.
Issue as a symbolic issue as well as a real life issue.
A lot of the unpaid programmers are young, doing a very good job, and all of us put money out of our own pocket rather than get to a fundraiser, which costs the park $9 a week trip. But we bring in our own CDs to the air check. People suggest we do a flash drive. This is coming out of our own pocket. So it's both a real money issue, but it's also a symbolic issue. When we had the initial motion, it was a breakthrough in Sitka. And the unpaid programmers at other stations applauded it, felt that we were paving the way. So even if it cannot be paid immediately, effective with the 2009 fiscal year, I strongly urge us to put $10,000 in the budget, which is more than half of what it had been before. And with the understanding that arrangements should work out.
I'd like to let Sean respond to that, because he did have some definite input for that.
Well, I think the pastor mentioned what our budget provides us, which is to say, this is our budget, this provider that comes, you know, above projected income, our goats in it. So it's not actually part of your budget, but it's clear to everybody that if we outperform, that's our budget. So you might want to consider doing it as a budget provider rather than an item in the budget.
Can you elaborate on the legal implications of doing it the way it's been done and what your discussions are with National Flood Risk Center comfortable with?
Sure.
Well, we might kind of have to get there.
I do understand the concern and respect the request. There are a couple of issues, whether it's approved or not, and it is, by a lot of money, that's fine. There are some legal issues with California State EDD on how we distribute those funds. Basically, a stipend for unpaid staffer, we need to have a system in place, legal and compliance with the state. That's one concern. The other was just, another DMV member on the board, and I know I've several have been on the board in the past. We have been able to pay our central services and our and the national office is indicating the union of expecting central services from us until next year, sometime in the middle of next year. So I'm trying not to spend any money where we absolutely don't need to, but if the LSP feels that this is a place where we need to be consider, then I completely understand that the money was not placed there in the spirit of trying to balance budget, trying to get back on track with paying for our government, start paying central services, start getting a good standing in the national, and then we also, of course, we need to find the state. So if we do put money in there, we need to seriously come up with a plan and system that is in compliance.
I'm
going
to share a little
bit more on the IBM had ruled that receipts would have to be turned in. We were given advances. Every program, it's not each programmer, every program, because there are a lot of ones. People have to turn in receipts or Efren is going to and he would have to declare to say something, one or the other. And I know that many collections did buy recorders, flash drives, etc. So I think that you can get around some of the legal issues, and I think it's a symbolic and real money issue. And I don't know even if how it would work with the proviso if you have a specific proposal or whatever. We can say that it will be put into your budget at X times, like 6 months after or something. So it's actually there.
I want to kind of honor the fact that we have a growing staff and probably even more comments on this subject. And I know you had mentioned reimbursement, which is different than getting the money up front and then providing the receipt. It would be bring the receipt to the office for equipment, and it would be reimbursed up to a certain amount. So there still may be some way to achieve this without involving employment.
There are other questions then of who owns the new equipment.
Yeah.
I mean, we can take a look at the actual challenge of the problem and solve that, I think, in several different ways. You know, making sure that paid, unpaid programmers have the equipment they need is another, I think, story in itself. I think we should address that.
Okay, some of the structural issues. Okay, with that issue, this is focused on your next.
Oh, no, I did have some other issues.
Oh, okay. I don't know. I want to do this efficiently. But go ahead. Yeah, I think some other issues. We'll just try to get through this because I think
it's I thought at that meeting extension that the $2,500, $400 a year for a staff to go to the EMB was cut. But the budget I looked at is still there.
It's back out.
Well, I would like to recommend that it be in for September. I think it would be extremely important and helpful for a new GM to physically be there and be meeting the GMs from the United States. So I would like to recommend that it go back in for the September meeting. The National Federation of Community Broadcasters, I'm wondering why we also belong. I thought the national, when we were doing it, trying to figure out where to post GM position, I understood that the national office had membership. So I'm wondering if it's necessary for us to also have membership. The National Federation of Community Broadcasters.
Okay.
And with regard to trying to get a commitment bring up to those of you who weren't in the meeting last week, I suggested that LSD members actually phone within a week of a fund drive. That it would be very helpful to have heard from us. So I would ask the next drive, I'm with the board is, after I'm sign up sheet, I think it'd be very helpful.
The third unit, it's $275 a year that this is where all the papers are and old folios and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Is it weather control, etc.? As a historian, I worry about this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the archives are weather control, but they're all like air conditioners.
As far as the reimbursement for the programmers are giving funds, I want to associate myself with the remarks of Sheriff. But I'd like everybody to turn to line 31. There are no capital improvements at all in this budget, and in particular when it comes to ADA compliance. Now I understand. Page 1 of 3, I think it is. Okay, I'm sorry, folks. Let me make my point here. There are absolutely no capital improvements, including $100,000 that was set aside for an elevator. This is an issue that KPFK has been dealing with for 20 years. Now, I understand in the hard economic times that we may not be able to put in an elevator this year, but we should be able to continue planning. We should show that we are at least moving forward. I would hate to say that KPFK is treating disabled people and senior citizens like the rest of society. We are the first to sacrifice and the last to have our civil rights properly considered. And if there was, we talked about money for our programmers. If that's a symbolic issue, I guarantee you that not putting in an elevator or even planning for ADA compliance is a symbolic issue of greater importance to the hundreds of thousands, if not more, of our listeners who are disabled or and/or senior citizens. So I would ask that some money be put in place so that we can continue planning to someday be in ADA compliant and someday put an elevator so that all members of the KPFK family can go up and down. And this is something we should do. I don't care about your politics on this. Look at the demographics. With the baby boomers aging, We have to have more and more people in wheelchairs and with disabilities, and if KPFK doesn't lead the way in making sure that we're ADA compliant, what have we really got to say for ourselves, folks? And I'll stop there.
Do you want to talk about that question?
I actually agree with that. How much money we have put in there is a big question. And budgeting, I would need to do more time to really look at it.
We've been waiting 20 years, so we'll do it.
Okay, you're on the staff. The person who's next to Josh, and I have some comments on that too, but I'll wait and put myself on the side with everybody else. So, Josh, you're
next. Sean asked most of my questions, which is the ADA compliance and the elevator. And although I don't see it in the budget here, as far as capital improvements, I'm wondering where else in this budget, where have the funds been segregated or allocated or reserved for that capital improvement?
For the elevator?
Yes.
Well, I think we all had a conversation about that at the finance committee, and I don't think I have an answer to that yet.
Because I personally cannot approve this budget without some allocation for the elevator, because we will be great on that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think we've confirmed how much yet.
I would like a good faith number to put in that, but as Sharon says, at least the total, but just to say, we're not exactly sure how much the word is saying. It doesn't exist.
Right.
The conversation was that indeed funds were raised on air last year. It's a legal service. We are legally obligated to allocate them. And there's an SBA income, which is that sideband income, which the national office is using for their expenses, when in fact it says that it shall be allocated to various units for special projects and qualifies as a special project. So I think it's a matter of straightening out our books, as it were, with national. You know, we're not paying our central services, instead we're using the SBA income to pay their bills. Well, we really should be applying to them to say, hey, you know, whatever the amount is, it's 80 or 100,000, to give us back that money as allocation for a special project. So I think it may not be like out of our basic operating budget, but I think by right, looking at all the policies and things like that, we have a right to ask for that money for this special project, and especially if it's going to be for that, then it's reasonable. So I don't know how we're going to resolve it today if we're passing the budget, but it's certainly, I think, we have an avenue open that says this is where it should come from, and how we can handle the different special projects as well. Did you have other questions on the budget? Yes. Okay, Israel?
Yeah, I want to still get myself with Yosef and Sean's concerns. There should at least be a token indication, even with an asterisk, explanation.
I'll provide
if you will. That one. Two, on the matter of the unpaid, I think I heard you right saying, well, the question is, do we have something in the budget, even not in that category, in which if, say, we need a certain piece of equipment for unpaid people, that can be taken care of under some other heading. Is that here now?
Yes.
What heading is that?
All right. Let's see. We have technical
equipment. That might be one.
No. We have more. We have been
The financial situation in KPK, it's really thin. I think that we on the finance committee, we're going to suggest putting something in the budget. We suggest taking something out of the budget. So, I'm sorry, we don't have the $2,500 or the $10,000 line item for debt to go to CNB meetings or whatever else. We just don't have it. We don't have $10,000 for the unpaid program. Those two items combined right now mean a half-time staff person. And you know what? The staff cuts we have going, we can't afford that. We can't afford it. We're already cut to the bone. And also, the thing we unpaid program is there's a certain amount of potential legal liability. The way that money's doled out, how it's doled out, has to be dealt with really carefully by the HR department, which is going to take a little while to figure it out. We open ourselves up to possible discrimination suits, all kinds of things. Anyway, that's my opinion. There's been some problems with that. There's talk about problems with that in New York. We're paying a 1099 person with WBAI who's not documented. So, I believe something. Some talk about it. But anyway, what I suggest is that we revisit this budget at the beginning of the next quarter. We approve it the way it is now. We just don't have the money for any of those line items, but that we make budget adjustments on a quarterly basis. And that we, right now, decide to have a quarterly budget adjustment meeting, either a special meeting or a 2-hour segment of an LSC meeting to make budget adjustments. But I think we should accept this budget as it is now, because if we can't add items, then we're going to take items away. And we don't have the time to do that, and we do also have to figure out how to put that $50,000 if it was the rate from the elevator project. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, if we're not really following the Americans with Disability Act, and we're open to legal liability because of that, because we have employees, that should take a high priority, because we don't need, we have so much, it's been in the hole so much for legal problems that we don't really want to be as clean as possible. So in the same time, I really suggest that we pass this budget as it is, unless there's some items that we still have questions about.
But
I would make a motion
for that.
Well,
I do want to let everyone who's on the staff get through. I'd like to let everyone get through the staff just so that everyone has a fast time having their questions answered. And then the other one really should pass the budget to the best possible.
Yeah, I do. Okay, that's it for questions.
We'll get to
that
after that.
Anyway,
I'm
not sure.
But I think that I finished with the fact,
but
right now,
end
with that. Okay, so
Ian
is next.
Yeah, okay. This is the National Federation of Community Broadcasters. I recall kind of a low power FM, micro radio thing, and they basically were, opposing low power FM and micro radio. So it sounds like we were paying them $5,000 a year. Silent people who I think generally speaking would rather have an opportunity to speak. So I have a problem with that organization getting money from us at all, number one. And number two, also under AP, I know there was a time when we were considering canceling the AP because it's redundant and you have sitting there in the voice. And frankly, it's just a propaganda note. You can go to a John Friend's press on the internet and get the same story back. So I would hope you would consider and work with the news directors or the news director to look at that. I would also wonder why we have two news directors, and that seems like a redundancy, and it seems like, you know, skills and experience-wise kind of imbalanced in some respects. But when it comes to Arbitron, we're paying how much per year now? Line 200 to 207 on page 4. We're paying apparently $8,000 a year to have Arbitron. I know for over a year on the Program Oversight Committee and probably the Personnel Committee at this point, we've been trying to get a look at those. And there has been no response. So the idea that members are being deprived access to things that we're paying for as a corporation is A, problematic on a legal basis, and B, it's just not cooperative as per someone's job description. So that's a problem for me, that we're paying for that and not being allowed to see. We'll change that for several months or years now. And then when it comes to ADA compliance, you know, in an ideal world, I would say, you know, CTSA should have an elevator, and we should, you know, also have, you know, mass transit passes for people who live in the inner cities who can't access CTSA.
That's not a law.
As a matter of fact, we're not violating the law, because the reason we're not violating the law is because there's nothing you can do upstairs and you can't do downstairs.
Except into the archives.
And the archives are not CTSA's problem, and they're moving. So, when the archives move, then you've got to go in with your $25,000 or $100,000 elevator, which we were promised last year we would have a ramp to pay for everything. And it really wouldn't cost anybody any money. This is all a great idea, and we had to put it in now because it's an emergency, and because we're our backs up against the wall, and I think we're aiding a sort of political pressure strategy when this was put in. Now, a lot of people went along with it because no one wants to be against, you know, letting people with disabilities or the elderly in the station. But the fact is that if you need to do PCR work, you know, production control room work off the air, if you need to really do that, and you have a disability, we can put the switch in master control and make master control go upstairs. So they can broadcast live from upstairs, and downstairs becomes production control, and there's nothing to do upstairs that you can't do downstairs. We can create a separate accessible computer workstation if we need to, you know, and we've created, we've done things to accommodate disabilities. So to say that the only thing you can do to accommodate people with disabilities is put an elevator seems kind of ridiculous to me, because the archives are the special intention of the building. And once they're out of the upstairs, we're going to have more room up there to, you know, get some storage, move stuff out of those or whatever. But the point is, as long as we don't have anything that's upstairs that's not downstairs, we don't really have to do that. I mean, this is an old building. Financially speaking, this isn't the time to be spending that money. When it comes to the unpaid programmers, you know, there's a lot of things that are hard to show receipts for. I drive there 2 times a week, and that's 20 miles east west. Okay. So that's 40 miles, and it's, you know, 15 miles to the gallon, that's 20 gallons a year. But the point is that is the cost of doing business. The cost of showing up, that's what it costs to show up every week to bring free programming to people on the air. Some of these things cannot be received, or they can be just bring in one gas receipt a month and say, yeah, I spent $90. And the point is that it's not going to be long on with that, and I've got the time at the moment unless you're calling time on it. So the point is that, you know, it seems to me someone who doesn't work with people sometimes, you don't look at the flower, then you can't even get $500, but especially for homeowners, it's like exemption, we ought to look into those.
Okay, we get to your point on reimbursement for the other issues, the budget,
though, that's why that should be in the budget, is because, you know, the fact is we spend, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars, not just on paying people to show up and produce, you know, and overseas programs that are produced by volunteers and whatever, but we also pay dental and medical and all these other things that, you know, make it accessible for the people who have those jobs. But those jobs didn't used to exist. You know, they used to be like one drive time producer, and that was pretty much it. And we used to have people who train people how to make radio. You know, one person, two people, or people who are the executive.
I know,
the Grace was saying was absolutely wrong, that we can't afford to cut positions. These positions were created out of thin air as we had money in our pocket. And we felt like we were going to dole it out to people who we thought deserved it. And so basically, you know, whoever was in that room decided who deserved it. But the point was that we created these positions, we can change our model. You know, we can have a good manager and a good program director and a good producer training people how to produce radio, whether it's news production or
whatever. If you're advocating for the unpaid programmers and against the elevators,
essentially,
the budget
turns out. We have a different model of staffing so that we don't have to.
I understand, but we still have to get through the budget process today. So I understand you have some structural issues with how things are allocated. We need to still deal with the line items that we've got to
do. Well, the line items would be under what you're talking about.
Okay, you're in support of the unpaid programmers and against the elevators, essentially, the two issues. Dave, you're going to
help with that. I want to agree with the point about a couple of things. I've always thought the elevator should be a problem by national because it is active, the archive, it is the issue. And it's interesting given if we're going to be getting some
if only developers will come to a pan-national back, maybe there can be a negotiation with them such that they defer to every part of it. I do think it has to go in. If you're moving the archives, I don't think it's that many times in the system.
That's right.
And but the issue really is that people with disabilities don't have access to that. And so that's a national unit. That should be part of the national budget. They always place it on a trajectory that
quick one information.
from the JDA. Corners are maybe the 10% journey, and that's a general category.
By major budget category.
Major budget category.
So that is, the sections of the budget are income, admin expenses, development expenses, programming expenses,
and capital. And that's discretionary to put them in.
Then you don't have to go to a board of supervisors if it changes by more than 10%, or if any budget is changed by less than $10. That's something that's
the items included that should have been.
Yeah.
Trainer,
I was
trainer,
I was.
Why is this
you couldn't just reduce the surplus by 10,000.
We're not talking about essential services, but it's going to be very difficult for Sean and Margaret and I to be looking for the
services. We're not paying on essential services, but our essential services is part of the budget. So it's in the P&L. So that 400,000 is the P&L, that item is still in there, even if we don't actually make it.
Sean, can you address that? We feel that we've been ensuring $400,000 surplus on calculated by the end of 2016 for 1 month.
Well, and if that includes day after day at all central services?
Yeah. I mean, it's in line on the budget page of 126. It's the income with it after central services. Before central services is 561. 443 after is 400.
What can you do on this?
I won't make it on the so it should be the first page, because your first page is total income, then you have expenses, and I'm seeing income before central services, and then central services is 5.1, net income loss of that central services 401.
But are you, I'm not sure if you can answer right off, we have a deficit of $400,000 roughly already that is not part of our regular budget, and I'm not sure that can hang off on higher deficit.
Well, for that, but paying off deficit should be the cash and capital portion here. It comes in, actually, the way it's coming before, is the way we have the cash and capital portion, what they had is a 5-year surplus, and paying off the deficit would come in with cash and capital with a negative number and 5-year surplus. So that's how you account for it, the way it used to do it. That's not fair, so that's not accounted for, so I don't know.
I'm kind of lost.
What I am getting is that we're either going to have like a surplus at the end of the year, or we're not, depending on whether or not we're paying off the debt. That's the good news. The bad news is that we're basing on this, all this, on 85% fulfillment rate, which, you know, I certainly would love to give all the confidence, you know, in the world to Sean, because he's obviously, you know, got his head in the game here. But, you know, if we come in, say, 79%, then we're going to be $100,000
short. The manager has the authority to change spending. The budget is a planning guide.
Right.
The manager has a lot of things in that to change. But what I want to know is, for the way we've done in the past is the cash and capital. That capital section of the budget is below that line of the flow. That should have a line that's 5-year surplus. That line was the way we brought into the profit and loss statement anything that was on the balance sheet that
was
completely existing. Right. Or in which you brought in, for example, in the years when we did capital spending, when we didn't make the money that year, when we had it, that's the line it came in on. It's a weird thing. So I don't know how we can do this. But I don't know right now, and I haven't heard, what are we up? So how much of that surplus that we're showing is actually available?
Well, I know that we're about $400,000 in arrears when we factor in the aviation expenses that are picked up in cash. We haven't reimbursed them for, along with our unpaid central services, so effectively we don't have to cash and capital out of them here. That surplus may exactly, if you put it with them, all of a sudden.
So if we're talking a little bit higher here, I mean,
I'm just encouraging you to be cautious in the numbers.
In terms of something that's here and there that we can live with and actually get to have that isn't going to potentially involve EDD issues. I mean, we're talking reimbursable expenses, I'm not saying
that, you know, guys, we're understanding that the implementation will be worked out based on EDD requirements, et cetera, et cetera. Because the issue is that something is shown. And even, as I said before, that it means deferring payment. To see if we make a fulfillment rate. And that's the question by the advisor. But we need something so there are one of us. And the other motion is $2,500 for Sean to go to the September.
Okay, so why don't we take those two parts? What you basically want is a provisional line item for the unpaid program is of your $10,000 if and when we are actually able to show that we're meeting our budget. So that it is in the budget,
right?
Correct?
I have a suggestion. Do you want to extend
No, I have a suggestion.
Yeah.
Why don't I put my motion on the table?
Yeah,
and
then, anyway.
I would suggest that what Leslie suggested was really very good. That we take her the two suggestions that she made. Number one, that $5,000 is put in the first 6 months, another $5,000 with the proviso that if the funds are available, and then also that the money we put back into
She just pointed out that the manager went on the air, we advertised that we were taking this extra $200,000 to go to the Elliott Fund. However, as a point of order, if over $25,000, the manager didn't have the approval to make that statement.
But the point is, you made it to the public and you're obligated to.
Yeah. Well, I think that should be the manager himself, Jim Lafferty, who made these
files. Right, yeah, but wait, that's not my on your next amendment.
please carefully word it, Charlotte, however as gracefully as you can on these issues.
$10,000 to be shown in the unpermitted expenses line.
Okay.
With the asterisk.
Right. That it's provisional.
That it is provisional based on, I would say, both the commitment rate and surplus.
Provisional on meeting the budget, so okay. So $10,000 to be placed in the budget for unpaid programming, provisional on actually meeting our budget projection.
And the understanding is that the dynamic is going to get worked out so that they want to be.
Right, exactly.
Meeting our budget expectations or exceeding.
Exceeding our budget projections or meeting our budget.
No, if it's there and we meet the budget with it there, it should be meeting for.
Conditional
upon a surplus. Thank you, Terry. Okay, conditional upon a surplus.
Okay.
For a budget projection. Does that sound correct? Okay.
We wouldn't be able to fund.
No, can you keep up with all this? Hell no, of course not. Okay.
Point of information?
Yes, sir.
Shouldn't that be the word expenses on that? Unpaid programming expenses?
Yeah.
But the word.
Well, we have to try to get the
word
together.
Because you didn't have that word. You turned that word out of the box and
it's
still
the hit and loss. It's the same as last year. It's there. It says zero. It's already in the budget of zero.
Well, we're making slight changes. We're making the provisional upon exceeding our budget projection, right? We're not here. No, I'm not here. This is my
fault. Remind me of coming up.
You bet, and you'll have to recapitulate a little, okay?
Right.
Thank you. That would be fantastic. Okay, and then maybe we can vote on the
amendment. Did we vote on the amendment?
No, we have not. I'm actually writing your amendment down because my understanding is that we can repeat it, okay? So $10,000 unpaid programmer expenses to be placed in budget, provisional upon surplus over current budget projection. Is that correct?
Thank you.
And then we can go fight over the national again. We'll get that money yet.
Okay, I think it would read that the line item for capital reserves in the elevator look at the construction project based upon the amount that is being raised. Take that in the
Can you recapitulate the quarterly dates for you that you were talking about, or is that for
Sure, public comment. Oh, my God.
Yes, for my 27 remaining minutes.
How are you? At the increased level this year, because the default month for calculating the demographics of our audience showed that we did not have a sufficient minority audience to qualify for the enhanced level of CPB funding. At that point, National Program Director Nathan Moore recrunched every month and found one that looked better.
Good.
We appealed the CPB determination. There is an option for us to present an alternate month. Under that alternate month, we qualify for enhanced CPG funding. So I would like to urge the GM to approximate and determine what month that was. If it was May, then I suggest we plan out to have very strong Cinco de Mayo programming.
The motion is on the floor to approve the budget as amended. All those in favor, or if there are no objections, all those in favor, shall we do it?
Yeah.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. In favor, all those against. Abstentions. 1, 2. Thank you. Our meeting is adjourned for the finance portion and budget portion. Thank you all for participating and for reviewing the budget.
I object to the motion to adjourn.
I'm adjourning the finance portion. They asked that, I think Adam maybe the better part of caution since some people may have been here on the budget, but I think that everyone would prefer that we turn those back into the office. Now, obviously, we have electronic versions, so please, everyone needs discretion.
Thank you.